Hey, this is Alan C. Gardner from Bad Bad Man, and you're listening to Extra Features Podcast.
248?
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm Kevin.
I'm Simon, and I'm really pissed off there are no garage notes.
I'm Daniel, and I love Kijiji.
I'm Doug, and I'm an alcoholic.
Welcome, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
Well, I wanted to start off this week to one of our members posting something on Facebook that he doesn't even realize I want to discuss. A certain member of our team hates romantic comedies.
Yes.
Really? Hates them. So I wish I had my phone here. I would have brought it up because I did shoot it on my phone, so I had it all there to talk about. So I guess he can answer on his own. Doug?
Yes. I do not like romantic comedies. I can probably bring up the post where I talked about it, but basically I feel like, for me, romantic comedies, they either veer too heavily into the romance and forget about the comedy, or the comedy is just lame and just doesn't work for me, and they forget about the romance. There's a handful of romantic comedies I like.
Okay. I'll start there. Sleepless in Seattle.
Not one of my favorites, no.
Wow.
When Harry Met Sally?
No, I'm not big into the Nora Ephron things.
So what's the one you might like?
All right, this...
And is it Rebecca or something from Hitchcock?
This, but my favorite all-time romantic comedy is Annie Hall.
Which is fabulous.
Mm-hmm. So that's horrible to say now because Woody Allen is a horrible, horrible human being. But I just adore Annie Hall.
Well, let's start that. I want to say, I watch movies for movies. Mm-hmm. Okay? If somebody just put a movie on and I didn't know who directed it and I enjoyed it, I'd say I like that film. I mean, people have done numerously bad things on the film. I agree with you about Woody Allen. He's not it, but I watch movies. I like movies. I enjoy them. I'm not watching because Woody Allen directed. I watch it because I haven't. This way. I'm not talking about the person. I watch film because I enjoy film.
Separating.
Now, if I went to Woody Allen's house and told you I had lunch with him, you guys, I'm fair game. Feel free to whoop me what if I tell you that. Oh, I had a lovely time with Woody Allen. You'd be like, what? That I get. But I can't say that I'm watching a film. I mean, I think William Shatner's a dick. But I still watch his films, you know what I mean? I could still enjoy Star Trek, even though I don't like that him.
There is a difference between just being an asshole and committing crimes, though.
That is true. But I'm sure other actors have committed crime. I mean, look at Kiefer Sutherland. How many DUIs does that guy have?
True. True.
I mean, he could have killed somebody numerous times.
Yes.
But I love 24, and I've watched every season.
And Matthew Broderick has, you know, committed vehicular homicide while drinking. But
exactly my point. So we can go after Woody Allen, but we need to go after everybody else, too, if we're going to do it. That's the way I'm looking at things. I think Kevin had a good point. Dundas Street in Toronto, people wanted the name changed because he's slavery. But my argument is these things were named 200, 300 years ago. Does anybody care anymore? I obviously they do, but what are we going to name it now? Somebody else we don't know something about in the past?
Right. I think my thing was that nobody knows, who this guy was. He's irrelevant. Some hipster dude was watching the news one day and saw some complaints from Scotland that they had about the person and thought, oh my God, there are streets named after him. Maybe we should change the name because it's disrespectful to people of color. And like some people said, well, maybe. Okay, I guess. Sign the petition. So now they're going to review it. But this is sort of how we're going. I mean, I don't have a problem with them changing the name. I don't think anyone cares who this person is, and it's a lot of money to change all these street names. So, do you walk down the street and go, I wonder, I'm on, you know, Main Street. Do you think it might be named after somebody? Maybe it's named after Jim Maine. I don't know. Like, maybe he was a slave trader.
Oh, now they're going after the city of Vaughan. I'm like, this is just getting ridiculous.
The problem I have is that pretty much every white politician of the 18th and 19th century was a racist, so you might as well just rename all the streets.
No. Kevin, Bob, Phil, Doug, Daniel, like, just make it easy.
No. Hire a commission. This is Duck Street.
Yeah.
Elephant Lane.
Seagull Lane.
You know, stuff that's non-threatening, non-scary, non-whatever. You can't use things like Grave Street because, you know, it's frightening to people.
No, it's very scary.
It's a bad imagery.
I think so. You just gotta be careful. I just want all the scales to go away because I find them offensive right now. And all these people can't go to the gym like myself. So I'm finding scales offensive. They need to go. I'm starting that right now today. Scales, goodbye.
Right.
Okay. So let's, on a higher note, let's have some fun and discuss the Beastie Boys.
Oh, I thought you were going to someone else in there. Beastie Boys story, directed by Spike Jones, starring the Beastie Boys, Mike D, Adam Horowitz, Adam Yaw, in archive footage, and a couple of great cameos at the end.
Well, Daniel, I do need some time for you to read off the 4,000 DVDs you've bought in the last 2 weeks.
Do you want me to go right now?
No, I think we can wait, because, I mean, people may want to have a nap at the end of the show. Maybe they're getting ready for bedtime listening to this.
Oh, okay. It's
been just a nice way to fall asleep.
Yeah, my voice is pretty soothing, right?
It's very soothing, yes. Very soothing. So I want to talk about, this is my list this week, so everybody's mad, email me personally. That's extrafeatures@gmail.com. I will make sure I get it. So I'm a huge Beastie Boy fan. It's the first album my parents took away from me. Oh, man, I wasn't allowed to listen to it anymore and hid it under their bed, which pretty dumb because I found it there. Played it again. So this was like a nostalgia trip down memory lane for me, and I wanted more. Could not have enough of this. I loved all the songs. I loved the stories. I didn't know them. I liked that they were there discussing it with a live audience. I thought that really worked for me. I mean, obviously it's filmed over a couple nights, I would say, not just one, but maybe it is one. I don't know. But I thought this was fantastic. If you're a Beastie Boys fan and you want to know more about them, this is awesome.
Yeah. I'll give a little personal information here. The Beastie Boys was the greatest concert I ever went to. If you've seen their concert film, Awesome, I Fucking Shot That, that's the concert I was at. They gave away 50 cameras to people in the audience, and they filmed everything, and then Adam Yauch took it and edited it into a concert film.
Hold on. Did you get a camera?
No, not at all.
Okay.
It was still an amazing concert. Best concert I ever went to. They had a dog show open for them. So dogs doing
trade.
My wife watched that. I was in the tunnels of Madison Square Garden watching the Yankees beat the Twins in the playoffs that night. Mm-hmm. It was the final game. They went on to go play Boston the next night. It was an incredible night all around. So those are my bona fides for the Beastie Boys. I like parts of this. To me, it felt like a TED Talk. It was marketed as, you know, an interactive documentary. I just wish it wasn't marketed as being so innovative. It was just a TED Talk starring Mike D and Adam Horowitz.
I'm fine with it. That's what I wanted.
Yeah, for TED Talk, I love this. You know, I agree. I was thinking, I was like, oh, okay. So basically a concert film, but just like a stage show kind of thing. Now, I know the Beastie Boys, but I never listened to them. So the only song I knew was Sabotage, but not really by name. So for someone who didn't know a thing about the Beastie Boys, I was very entertained. I was sad when it ended. I was like, wait, there's 15 minutes left. Like, I didn't expect it to end right there. And then there was all those cameos at the end. But no, I was like emotional at times, and it was really good. I really liked it.
I remember buying License to Ill back in, was it 86?
Yep.
And that album was like an atomic bomb. For me and my friends, it was just such an unusual, like, I've never was a really a fan of rap or anything like that, but, you know, you've got to fight for your right and all the various songs on that album. I loved it. And, you know, I love Paul's Boutique, which is funny because they talk about the fact that nobody bought it. But I remember when it came out, and I remember being awesome.
Yep,
it was pretty heavily sampled. But then I don't know what happened after that. The Beastie Boys were just kind of always around in the background with great songs. And I never did see them live, and I never bought any other Beastie Boys albums after that. But, you know, how Intergalactic and Sabotage are all great songs. Actually, I do have the Hip Sounds from Way Out, the instrumental album, which is fantastic. So I had a great time sort of revisiting this and hearing how they were screwed right off the start by Def Jam Records and what happened there, but how they rebuilt themselves. You know, the story behind that funky house in the
bad story
with the clothing, the breaking into the lock closet. You know, they're like 320-something guys in the house with a lock closet. And of course, they're breaking into that closet to find out what it is. But no, I loved it. The music was great. The stories were great. Those guys really did mature over the years.
Wow.
They're still fairly young looking, but they're like, it's funny. The one guy, Horowitz, he looks a bit like, the guy from Sherlock, the Hobbit, you know, Martin Freeman.
Okay.
Kept reminding me of that. And then of course, hearing what happened to Adam Yauch and the cancer and how the guy was kind of like a savant. He knew everything. He was a tech genius. You know, there were a lot of times they're like, okay, let's do this with these 3D photos. And they're like, how the hell do you know about that? You're with us all the time and you've never looked at this stuff. And, but yeah, he was just one of those guys that was always watching out for the next big thing. So I had a lot of fun. It would have been great to see this live. And it reminded me, I've gone to similar retrospective shows. Went to a Meatloaf one maybe 15 years ago where he just sort of ran through his career. That was great. Meatloaf songs are amazing. So it was just sort of, he would tell stories and then he would break into song. Yeah. Nice face, Simon. So, we can see you, you know.
Oh, really? I wouldn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I highly recommend this. I don't know if I'd subscribe to Apple TV to get it, but, you know, it's worth a try, worth a check out if you can get it.
No, I wouldn't subscribe to Apple TV for this, but I think it's definitely worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
Get the free trial.
Yeah, get the free trial or just know somebody that can loan you something. I have to say, without Adam Yauch, the band is nobody. It's all him. He did everything.
Yeah.
The line that stuck with me from this documentary was the Adam Horowitz saying, you know, I'd rather be a hypocrite than stay the same for my entire life. That just really struck me. That hit me because they also showed how they changed from the party boy beginning to mature artists by the end.
And now they're old. It's kind of weird. They look like me. I'm like, oh, my God, my heroes are old.
Oh. So they're retired, right?
They had no choice.
Right.
They're driving for nine of them.
Yeah, but they could still do stuff, right?
No, they can't. Adam Young was the whole band.
Yeah, they didn't want to do it after him.
But, I mean, he wrote everything. You listen to them, the way they talk. Adam Young did Sabotage, Intergalactic. That's all him. And I felt bad for that girl. The one thing we haven't discussed on that fourth member, they sort of just ditched.
Kate Schellenbach?
Yeah, she got ditched.
But they did make it up to her, and she was a founding member of, or a member of Luscious Jackson.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, and she's been a friend for...
I thought she was going to show up on stage. I really did.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't, but oh well.
Okay, I guess we can move along then.
Sure.
Since Josh Trank showed up again, and I think he tranked again.
Who let this man out of director's jail?
You did. You bought some DVDs. I think you bought 100 of the same one.
I have two copies. I only have two copies of Chronicle, Simon.
Okay. That was the one I was worried about.
Sorry. Starring Tom Hardy, Linda Cardinelli, Matt Dillon, Al Sapienza, Noel Fisher, Kyle MacLachlan, and Jack Logan. Capone.
Okay. I will start a little bit. This was painful. Truly, truly painful. I thought the only time I had a chuckle was when he took a dump in his pants. I thought it was hysterical. I did like the scene in the ballroom with the golden gun, I think it is, the golden Tommy gun. I thought that was well shot. I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. Why was Matt Damon in this film? Could somebody please help me? Because that made no sense, those scenes.
Wait, Matt Damon was here? Oh, Matt Dillon.
Oh, sorry, Matt Dillon, yes. Those scenes, I'm like, and then he just disappears. I'm like, okay. So it was pointless. As I read, one reviewer said, this is a really good student film. I have to agree with that statement. It is a really good student film.
I can go. And, you know, Josh Trank has blamed, the studio for Fantastic Four, but he can't blame anyone for this because he edited it himself.
Yeah, he's junk.
I felt like it was plotless, and Tom Hardy was fascinating, but I can't tell if it was a really good performance or really bad. And I feel like I'm more towards the bad, just how it was inspired by Bugs Bunny, but half of it was hilarious, like when he had the cigar and he was like, ooh, let's go fishing to Matt Dillon. And then, when he shot himself, but, like, other parts were gross, like when he shot himself in the bed. And it was a mess. It's sad watching him deteriorate, and he's, supposed to be 47, but he doesn't look 47?
Correct.
At all. And, I don't know, it's just a mess all around.
I would have to say, actually, I didn't hate it as much as you guys did, but...
Lucky you.
I thought that Tom Hardy actually looked like Al Capone.
He did.
So I'll give him that.
Yeah.
I wasn't really up for a movie about an old rambling dementia fool. And yes, the shitting himself in the bed was something else. I'm surprised that the other actors who were in this were in it. Maybe they were blackmailed or something. Yeah. So Linda Cardinelli and who else was in it? Kyle MacLachlan.
Kyle MacLachlan just needs a job. He just needs something to do. Mm-hmm. He'll work for peanuts.
Yeah, well, he got some peanuts, clearly. so I don't know. I don't know what the point of this was. Is that Capone he lost some money and he was trying to remember that?
No.
And he couldn't, and he was going crazy, and what?
He thinks he lost some money. He's crazy. He has no idea. He has no more money. That's why he sold all the statues.
Right. And he thinks the cops are on his tail for it.
Right. He's demented. Right. I mean, that's what happens. He's losing his mind. Hence, we have these weird flashbacks that make no sense, and then he shits the bed.
Well, so every time he has a stroke, he goes into a weird fantasy land where things happen. But, I won't recommend this film. It's not very good.
Well, it's very kind.
But I didn't hate it as much as you guys.
Fair enough.
If you had told me that a movie in which Tom Hardy plays Al Capone in a shit-filled, sagging diaper with mowing people down would be as bad as this movie was, I would not have believed you. But the shitting the bed scene, that it was a metaphor for Josh Trank's film career. And it was bad. The one thing I was looking forward to was the music. I'm a fan of LP, half of Run the Jewels. He was the composer for this film. He's friends with Josh Trank.
That's a mistake.
The music was boring. I was expecting something a little more energetic. Instead, it just felt like he fell asleep on a keyboard and was just music tones.
We all fall asleep on the keyboard.
What happened with Linda Cardinelli? Like, I feel bad for her. Does she owe somebody a favor? She doesn't need the money.
The only thing she does is... She slaps him, right? When Matt Dillon disappears.
Yes.
Like, get me another brandy or whatever.
I just think this, I don't understand the point of this. Was this supposed to get a theatrical release, or was it always edged towards VOD? Yes?
Theatrical, yeah.
Why? This thing would have bombed completely. Trent should be praised if it went to pay money.
I focused on the wrong parts of Capone's life. They should have done a story of him coming up in Chicago and, something. You know, something more exciting.
Like, I'm sure the best part of my life is going to be a shit in my diaper in an old age home. Like, that's not the part of my life I would focus on for anybody. Yay! Like,
screaming along to the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Or, Sophia the First.
Yeah, no, it's just, it felt sad, and it was weird how it, like, had this, like, horror thing. It felt like The Shining when he went in the ballroom.
Yes, I thought that, I couldn't figure if that was real or not. And I'm like, no, it's not, because nothing in this film is real. It pissed me off.
Even the Golden Tommy gun. What the fuck?
Well, I did think that scene was well shot. At least something got right.
But then there's the whole tidal wave, and I mean, yeah, it was shot. I was like, what the heck is going on?
I have no. Well, I guess there's no high notes in this one.
Now we're hitting the high notes. Okay, The High Notes, starring Dakota Johnson, Kelvin Harrison Jr., Tracy Ellis Ross, Ice Cube, Bill Pullman, Zoe Chow, June Diane Raphael, and Eddie Izzard.
You two didn't watch this, right? Just me and Daniel Sun. Start.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'll start. Like I said before the podcast, I thought it got good in the last 20 minutes, but from the start, I couldn't really figure out where it was going. It felt way too flat. I could figure out where it was going, but it felt very unfocused.
Mm.
Like, while also being formulaic, and I liked Dakota Johnson, because I like her acting, even though it's the same character she usually plays. Can't really make my opinion up on Tracy Ellis Ross yet, though. I haven't seen her enough to really make an opinion, but I just thought the character was boring.
Is she in Little, or did I get the wrong one? That's the one.
That was just a ray.
Okay, that's the next one. Okay. I don't think High Note knows what it wants to be. Like, it's not a romantic comedy, because that's what I thought it might be, but didn't go that way.
Romantic drama, I guess?
And then I thought maybe it's going to be a drama, but it didn't do that. I don't think it can find it. The problem with Dakota Johnson is, she's Dakota Johnson every movie. She's never above Dakota Johnson level, never below Dakota. She's always the same level. She never gets upset. She never gets angry. She's just Dakota Johnson. Look at me. I'm going to walk, talk, and act the same way you see me in every film I've ever done. And I feel bad for Kelvin Harris Jr. Kelvin?
Harrison Jr.
That was right.
Yeah, pretty much.
I want to see this guy break out and do something. Like, Waves, this, do something for me.
Loose? I thought he was really good in Loose.
Loose is probably his best performance, but I hated that film.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, no, fair enough. It couldn't find its voice, and then it found it for the last 20 minutes when the little predictable twist hit. And then I was like, okay, it found its heart, but that's a long time.
Oh, that twist was terrible. I was like, oh, yay.
Yeah, an hour in, like when the romantic conflict happened, I was like, oh, he doesn't want to perform because it's his mother.
Yes, but we didn't know that, and I didn't care.
No.
I was kind of like, this film is not pushing any boundaries. It's not taking any chances. And I wanted to do something else to do.
Yeah, and it's just flatline on arrival, and it just keeps going. I mean, I didn't think it was bad, but it just never hit the high notes, I guess.
You got it. Okay, moving along. Oh, I gotta play some music. Hold on a second. Let me get it. It's 12 seconds. Why is it not playing, Mr. Brin?
If you're busy like me, going to the video store is a hassle. With Netflix, just make a list of the movies you want to see. And in about one business day, you'll get three delivered to your house.
My eardrum burst.
Yeah, sorry. That's my face buzz. I was like, uh-oh.
Well, that's the only Netflix music I can find. If somebody has some better options, maybe Doug can give me some. I should put some BC Sabotage in there.
It's okay. It was just loud. Mm-hmm. So, Lovebirds, starring Issa Rae, Kumail Nanjiani, Paul Sparks, Anna Camp, who first, I feel like that's the first movie she's done since Pitch Perfect, and Kyle Bornheimer.
So, what can we say about Lovebirds? Doug?
One thing I can say is the funniest parts were in the trailer.
Trailer,
I thought this movie would actually be a lot funnier than it was. So I ended up being disappointed in that respect. I found Kumail and Issa Rae, I found them very charming. They played well off each other. Just in the end of the day, I just ended up not really caring about this movie. I went in with expectations of The Big Sick, which I loved, but when I saw that Kumail was not one of the writers on this movie, he was just acting in it, my expectations started to drop, and it didn't have the charm or the humor of The Big Sick. I did like the leads, I did like Issa Rae, I did like Kumail, I just felt the jokes were tired. The action scenes, what there was of them, weren't that good. I wanted to like this more than I did.
That's fair.
Yeah, fair enough.
Kevin?
So I had no expectations for this movie. And I had seen the trailer and I wasn't excited about it. And I didn't think, I didn't look to me like it was going to be anything like The Big Sick or anything as good as that. But he's all right usually, so I figured I'd give this a shot, and I watched it this afternoon actually. So I thought it was cute. I wouldn't say it's gonna set any fires. It's gonna be the greatest movie ever. It's just a time waster during a slow period. So I would say that they're both fine in it. The premise is odd, and it kind of spins into an Eyes Wide Shut direction, which is very out of left wing, out of left field, I should say. So I don't know. I was entertained enough by the, I thought it was going to be a relationship movie, and then it turns into a crime movie. So I like that. I'm usually okay with the relationship movies, Doug, but I don't hate them all. But I was pleasantly surprised that this turned into an action comedy pretty quickly into it. So. The stuff with the horse and the bacon grease, I still have no idea what that was about.
It's not just me.
Made no sense. There's something about a senator and pictures and bribery and... Anyway, you have the bacon grease or the horse, or the behind what's behind door number two.
I still take door number two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... So I thought it was okay.
I mean, as far as what, there's like four kinds of movies like these, like the suburban couple gets caught in the murder mystery, game night, date night. I mean, I don't know. This is very much on the murder mystery level.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was
very Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. I thought it was flat. I chuckled, sure. I like Kumail. I don't really know if Issa Rae is funny. where's my train of thought going? But no, I really thought the actual murder mystery, I thought it was stupid. Like, oh, hey, I'm a cop blackmailing this sex cult. It just didn't work at all.
I thought the film was lacking depth at times. I really wanted to know more about the sex cult. Really, what was going on at some point would help me out, but everything seems very... like a comedy show, like I was watching a half an hour episode. It was all going to be rebooted the next day. You know, the next episode I turned into, Issa Rae looked great. I got to give her full credit. I liked the costuming. I thought Kumail Nanjiani was kind of dull, which I'm not a big fan of him. I know everybody else likes him more than I do, and that's okay. I don't have an issue with his acting. I just felt he had nothing to work with here. Same with Issa Rae. I liked her better in Photograph than I did here. And I just wish they had more to do. I just felt they were going from one plot episode to the next 22-minute plot episode to the third plot minute, okay, and then the end. And then, oh, at the very end of the film when they join the Amazing Race, oh, season two's here.
I, I would have much rather have just watched them on The Amazing Race and watched them.
Well, I think that would have been more fun.
Yeah.
It would have been different.
Because, I mean, that whole stupid apartment fight was awful.
Yeah.
And then the cops finally catch him. They go, like, oh, we know you didn't do it. Oh, you knew I didn't do it? Oh, because I was black. I thought you were after us. I'm like, oh, my God.
One thing that was clever. That was the fun bit I thought was clever when the cops were like, of course you didn't do it. There's cameras everywhere. We saw the whole thing.
I don't know. I needed more. I wanted to know what was going on. A little more depth here would help me out.
There were, like, the interrogation scene when they just babbled on and on. I was just like, okay, can we stop? This isn't funny.
And then they broke up and they're still hanging out together? That's kind of weird. When you see a couple splits, they're done. Especially at their level, splitting it like that. They were pretty pissed off. So I figured one would go one way, go another, but they still go into a party and they break up in the back of a cab? Oh, okay. Because it's just bizarre things like that.
It would have been more believable if they broke up after Amazing Race.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I agree with you. I mean, I think this is just the stuff Netflix puts out. It was shot like a Netflix film, looked like an extras film, felt like a Netflix film.
And it's kind of like that Adam Sandler movie when he went to Europe.
Yeah.
Murder Mystery, yeah.
Which I like better, actually.
Yeah, me too. It was directed by Michael Showalter, who did Wet Hot American Summer, right?
Which I hated.
Or he starred in it. I can't remember what he's actually directed. But yeah.
So, The Big Sick.
He did The Big Sick?
Yeah.
I forgot. Okay.
But Camille wrote that. That was a solid script. It was a good movie. It had great jokes in it.
Yeah, Camille and wrote it, and Michael Showalter directed it.
Okay. So, yeah, okay. So only movies where Camille writes will be good. Okay.
Nobody has the movie I want.
Hey, it's on video. Blockbuster probably has it. I mean, we have over 10,000 videos.
Wow.
I'll watch these fast and have them back tomorrow, I promise. Relax. At Blockbuster, you can keep your videos for 3 evenings, so take home plenty. And use our 24-hour quick drop.
Do you have any children's videos?
Sure. Blockbuster's America's family video store.
Family.
You more kids videos.
Is it, Doug? Says right here it is.
More nights, more fun.
Blockbuster video. What a difference.
There we go. Video Vault on, baby.
Kings. I'm tempted to lip sync that, but I'd just be moving my mouth a little bit.
Yeah, just a bit. I guess we're going to start off with Kings of Summer, because it is summer season, even though quite not said summer. But this was actually recommended to me by Jake.
Oh, I'll do the cast.
Hey, can I finish?
Oh, sorry. Okay, well, I was going
to
do the cast.
You will get to do the cast, I promise.
Okay, hold
on. This was recommended to me from J.J. Carroll, who, Beyond the Blockbuster interview, this was his pick for a movie I'd never seen, and he was right, so I put it on the list. Cast, please.
Okay. Starring Nick Roberts, Gabriel Basso, Moises Arias, Aaron Moriarty, Nick Offerman, Megan Mullally, Allison Brie, Thomas Middleditch, Lily Reinhardt, and Kumail Nanjiani in a bit role.
Well, so is Lily Reinhardt. She's barely in this.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll blink, you'll miss her. She's in, I think, one scene, maybe.
Two.
Who wants to go first?
I'll start.
Okay.
Sure. So, like you, I had not seen this film, and I didn't know what to expect, and I loved it. I thought it was a lot of fun. A couple of high school students are fed up with their parents and decide to build their own house in the woods and forage for themselves and create a life, and they're joined by a third student who's kind of a freaky outsider, and they build the house, they steal the pieces, they live in the woods, they learn how to hunt, they play music on a pipe, like some kind of a water pipe or something, and then invite some girls to come over, and that's when the drama starts happening. So the girl the main guy likes turns out to end up going after his friend, and that kind of splits up the whole dynamic of the group, and I don't know, it's fun. It was quirky, lots of little cameos by a lot of TV people. You know, as we were talking about Kamal earlier in the show, and he shows up as a delivery guy in the film. But it's cool to see Offman and Alice Brie and a whole bunch of other people just showing up in little bits and pieces throughout the movie. So I thought it was well shot. It definitely had that summertime feel to it. So I would recommend it. I think they made a good choice telling you to check it out.
Well, that was nice. I'll tell JJ next time I speak with him, and that was good. I like this film. I was kind of on the, I don't love it, but I liked it. Parts of it I really, really enjoyed. I love when they couldn't find food. They went to the chicken palace.
Yeah.
That broke me up laughing. Nick Offerman to me steals this movie. And Megan Mullally, is that what I say her last name? Steal this film. They are so good in this and just perfect characters for what they do. As a parent, I believe she's a parent. I believe he's a parent. I like it. I really do like it. He's a bit of a dick, Nick Offerman, but it works for him as that character. I really believed everything that happened in this film. I really thought it could have happened. And maybe it did in real life, and that's where the idea came from. But I think it's a solid film. I find the second half's a little more rough for me than the first half. I find they repeat a lot, just like I'm trying to stutter there. And I find that, and it's sort of, I like the end. It's just that little bit in the last third I have a little bit of an issue with, and I have maybe a lot of issue.
I'll say that this is the second movie by Jordan Vogt Roberts that I've seen, the first being Kong Skull Island. And between these two films, I have to say I really like his style. I think he has his own visual flair, and I've enjoyed the two that I've seen by. I look forward to seeing more.
That's it?
That's what I have for now. I'll echo everything you guys said. It's quirky. It's fun. I like the cameos. I like the Kumail. I like Thomas Middleditch. I like seeing him. Alison Brie. I love anytime she shows up in anything, so... I was happy seeing this.
Yeah, I saw this in theaters in 2013. So this is first time in what, 7 years I've rewatched this? And I remember why I liked it. I remember why I didn't really like it at times. I love the humor. It's quirky, so it's like Napoleon Dynamite and with the kind of humor sometimes. I thought Moises Arias stole the movie as Biagio.
Yes.
Him saying he's gay, and he's like, no, that's cystic fibrosis. Lots of laugh out loud moments here, but I thought Joe was a bit of a dick. He was a brat. It's like, okay, we get that she doesn't like you, but he just became way too unlikable for me, and I just feel like it hurts the rewatchability. That was probably your issue, Simon, maybe, with that part that you referenced. So it was like, yeah, okay, he hurts the pacing a lot, and it's just this stupid little mustache. I wish they would have shaved. But, you know, I really like this movie. It's a good coming of age, trying to get your independence. It's an interesting premise as well. But I watched it 7 years ago. I don't really need to watch it again, but I like it.
Hold on. Would you pick it up on Blu-ray?
You know, I like the poster, so probably.
Fair enough. Now, I want to discuss Erin Moriarty just to touch on her. Whatever happened to her? She just kind of had a lot of films because she pops up a lot in things.
She's in The Boys.
Yeah.
Oh, is that where she ended up? That's why I don't see her. Okay.
And she's in Miracle Season with the volleyball movie you didn't like.
Okay, so she is still working because I think she's solid, just not great. Like, I like to see her in more stuff.
I really like her.
Yeah, it's a big part of The Boys.
Then I guess I need to watch The Boys.
You should.
Once you get access to Prime, you should watch it.
I do have access to Prime. I told you I do that. All right.
Well, there you go.
I will get there.
Got an opportunity.
So, guys, is it tossed salad or scrambled eggs or hard-boiled eggs?
Simple eggs, I guess.
I like my eggs hard-boiled.
I prefer... poached.
Okay. Well, we'll do hard boiled. Directed by John Woo, starring Chow Yun Fat, Tony Chiu Wei Lang, Teresa Mao, Philip Chan. I don't know if there's any other relevant people here, but.
Well, I guess I should start on this one since this is one of my all time favorite action films ever. This film is just nonstop wall to wall action. And even has a good story, I think. I mean, is it the greatest story? No, but it works. They have a plot. They need to do this. That hospital fight scene is just phenomenal. I love the warehouse scene. Looking at it back 20 years as I first saw it. Yeah, I see it very set up, but I just don't care. It is just nonstop trampolines, nonstop action, nonstop explosives. And Chow Yun-Fat is still the man. Always one of these, Jackie than Chow for me. This got me in love with Asian cinema. I got to meet John Woo. I got to meet Chow Yun-Fat. I'm still happy this day. I should have brought up my 8x12 to show you and show you my signed Chow Yun-Fat photo. It says to me. I got it signed. Nicest guy on the planet. What can I say? This film is phenomenal. I love John Woo. I've seen every John Woo film at this time. And it started me on my love of Asian cinema pretty much. I think this film's still amazing.
You left out the, I won't say best part of the movie, but it definitely has the best action soundtrack I've ever heard. I love the music in this movie. Just the opening in the tea house. It's amazing. I mean, this and The Killer by John Woo, they're neck and neck for favorites, but I saw Hard Boiled first. That last 40-minute fight scene in a hospital, that just puts it over the top for me.
I mean, I do remember seeing this years and years ago. I didn't get a chance to refresh my memory, but I do remember it was very stylish action and definitely it sort of set the pace for the 90s action film. This and The Killer, in a sense. But I think Hard Boiled, The Killer was first, I believe, right?
Correct.
Then Hard Boiled?
Yes.
Hard Boiled came out and then everybody went back to find The Killer.
Yep.
After that. You know, and the two guns firing and all that, the sideways shooting, all those things that John Woo and Chow Yun-Fat developed for this film that they copied in pretty much everything right through to like The Matrix and,
yep.
And other gun action films, right? Even made today, there's still an effect of this film. So, it's, you know, I highly recommend it. It's a good film to check out.
I think John Wick owes a lot to this film.
Indeed, yeah.
And I mean, that scene when Chow's covered in powder and the blood hits, splatters him, I'm like, that's just a phenomenal shot. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything like that. Like I said, I think anybody who watches John Wick has to watch this film. Because John Wick is pretty much just an updated version of Hard Boiled.
Yeah.
I love the whole bit with the flowers and like the kind of like was this released before Terminator 2 or after? No, it was the same year.
Same
kind of flower thing.
Yeah, but the thing is, nobody knew what this film was back then. Like, I mean, we didn't have the internet. You got to remember, to track this down, you had to track it down. They didn't have it at Blockbuster.
Oh, got you. I remember in college, I tracked down all of the John Woo films, all the Ringo Lam films, Troy Hawk. Me and my friends, we like would mail order all their movies in college and just sit in dorm rooms watching them. That is my college experience.
I had to go to a video store called Art and Trash Video. I think that's what it was called, wasn't it, Kevin?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that they had everything.
Suspect.
No, I went to Art and Trash on Young.
Okay, I went to Suspect, which was near Honest Ed's.
Yeah, so I discovered Russ Meyer there. That's the first time I saw Jackie Chan movies I couldn't find. Mm-hmm. The problem was, Dan, you don't understand, when we weren't looking for these, we had to go. And you may have to wait 2 weeks till somebody brought it back to see it. So, I mean, this was an experience. Yeah, but Blockbuster was a day. These were like Art and Trash video stores run by nobody. They had one copy. And they gave you a week to watch it because everything they had was foreign weird films.
Okay, I can't remember what the name of the place I used to go to up near Young and Shepherd that I used to get my stuff at. But they had a good selection of foreign films and action films.
And then what, a couple years later, Blockbuster woke up and started carrying these things. But right. By then, I had seen them all. So, yeah, Hard Boiled to me. I'm going to find the picture for next time. Hopefully, I'll bring it on. So, I guess we're moving along.
No, I didn't say anything.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, no, it's okay. I really liked it. I've only seen Face Off and Mission Impossible 2 by Wu.
Oof, Mission Impossible 2.
I know. I love Face Off, though. I like the action here, but I think for me, sometimes there's a wall of fatigue that I hit that it's like, okay, this is a bit much at times, but it's really well done. It's really well shot. Well, that's just me, Simon.
I like the bodies hitting the floor. More is better. You know me. I love this.
No, I know, but it's just... Sometimes for me, it just gets a little repetitive.
I get that.
No, but I really liked it. I really liked the characters. Story was simplistic, but it worked well enough. And
it's the hospital scene does it for me. As soon as they hit that hospital ending, yeah. And they're just gunning everybody down everywhere.
I like the character moment with the eye patch guy when the crime boss shoots the patients, and yes. He's like, "Dude, why?" And then he turns at them. I thought that was really good.
And yeah, he killed the only guy that was holding the wall for him.
Yeah, and I love the shot, I think it's blood coming out of his head, but it looks like his hair is just getting bigger.
Yes.
it was a really good movie.
And I even thought the girl usually in Hong Kong movies don't have anything to do, but she had something to do.
Yeah, with all the babies.
Yeah, I mean, I like when they're going down the wall and they're just gunning the guys down. Taking the babies out, and you wouldn't see that in an American movie. They would not show that.
Yeah.
Well, I thought the plan was pretty simple. I guess it got screwed up.
Simple plan, directed by Sam Raimi, starring Bill Paxton, Billy Bob Thornton, Bridget Fonda, Brent Briscoe, Chelsea Ross, and Gary Cole.
Another funny story why this is on my list. My trainer at the time when I first came to Ajax recommended this film to me 9 years ago. So I've never forgotten. And I said, you know what? I need to finally watch this film. It's been on my list for 9 years to watch. So that's why it's here. There's your story. Doug, you want to talk?
Sure. I mean, I remember seeing this film in the movie theaters. I, at the time, and I still am now, a huge Sam Raimi fan. So, I like seeing him move away from horror and try different genres. So, I think he had done the Western first and then this.
I think you're right.
So it's fun to see him do a thriller like this. But for me, Billy Bob Thornton stole the show.
I thought it
was phenomenal in this movie. His speech about his father or their father committing suicide that people just wrote it off as an accident driving down the wrong side of the road, but it was actually the father's way of killing himself so that way they could still get money. It broke my heart. It was... phenomenal. That was the heart of the movie to me, was that scene.
I just got to say, this film, the layers, it puts on a layer every 10 minutes. Another layer is added. Another layer is added. Another layer is added. I'm like, how are they going to get out of this? And then the ending is so simple. It's like over. I'm like, that was brilliant. Absolutely a brilliant ending. I was just so impressed by everybody in this and how it all worked and how he figured everything out and still got it in the end. And I just thought it was great. I was shocked I had never seen this movie in all the years I watched movies. And this might be the last Sam Raimi film I have to see. I think I've seen everything else. But Kevin will remind me, I'm sure at some point if I missed something. But yeah, I just think this is a wonderful film, and if you guys haven't seen it, please see this. I don't want to ruin too much of it. But Kevin, I thought Bridget Fonda didn't have a lot to do, but she was great in what she had to do. My favorite character is the sheriff, but again, he's a very good supporting character.
Mm-hmm. I thought Bridget Fonda had a lot to do of just being like, oh no, we need to keep this. And like her speech when she's trying to talk him out of giving it up. I thought she was great there. I thought this was perfect. I loved everything about it. All the twists it took, all the violence, you know, just the greed of it. Billy Bob Thornton was great. I died laughing when he was, like, when they first found it, and he was stuttering, and the Lou was like, okay, we get it. No, it's just, I want to watch, if I didn't have to watch Kings of Summer right after this to catch up for the podcast, I probably would have watched it again.
Oh, wow.
I don't know, maybe, I gotta watch it soon. I might see if my mom wants to watch it, like, this week or next week or something. I love it.
There you go. Kevin?
I didn't get a chance to revisit this for the podcast, but I did see it years ago, and I loved it. It's one of those Raimi films that I've not got to revisit since seeing it initially, but I do remember loving it. There's a certain Macbeth feel to it all.
Yes.
And there's the acting is fantastic, and it's a who's who of character actors that show up in all of Raimi's other films that sort of are in supporting roles. I highly recommend it. A great twist at the end with the money, you know, being useless essentially. So all that drama for nothing.
I just like the way that everything got getting layered and they kept finding ways out of it. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I had no idea where it was going to end. That's the part I was trying to figure out and I could not do it. So we're almost to the end, but Kevin wanted to go up to space and become a starman for some reason.
Did I?
Maybe. You did read the comic.
I don't know.
I definitely read the comic, and it was nothing like this movie.
Directed by John Carpenter, starring Jeff Bridges, Karen Allen, Charles Martin Smith, Richard Jekyll, Tony Edwards, and Dick Locker from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Which that's cop
number
seen.
One.
Nice.
Hitchcock.
Daniel, you're up, or Kevin?
Sure. I'll go first. I guess I was expecting more sci-fi, but it was like romance and the feds chasing them, trying to find out why Jeff Bridges is the alien is here. But I really liked it. I thought Karen Allen was great. Jeff Bridges and the way he talked was perfect. Just the fish out of water human. Humor worked a lot. That birth scene was really creepy when he turned himself into Bridges with the hair. I haven't seen it, so I really enjoyed it. Road trip movie. Sure. Yeah.
I'll let you in on a secret. I really hate Jeff Bridges.
I did not know. I know you do. Yeah? You hated Arlington Road too.
Recent appearances are hit and miss, so he's much better now than he used to be. I don't like this movie. I don't know why. It's a John Carpenter film. I should like it. It's got a great cast. I just don't like him, and he puts me right out of it. So I find, I've never wanted to revisit this film. I've seen it two or three times over the years and hope it might fix it. But, I mean, he takes the role of her deceased husband and she kind of falls for him, and there's something there, and, you know, it's okay, but it's no Escape from New York.
Correct.
You know, it's no The Thing.
I have to feel with you, Kevin. I don't know if I ever saw this film before. I thought I had, and I'm watching, like, I've never seen this film. And I thought I had for some reason. Nope, that, which is good. I got to see something new. I found this really boring. I just thought this is one boring romance road trip that goes nowhere. I thought it had more science fiction in it, but it really doesn't. It's a couple of scenes, him playing with magical eggs or something, or rocks. I don't know what the hell they were. And I just didn't care. I mean, that cop escape scene was terrible. Every scene, and they're in the diner. I'm like, I just don't care about these characters. I don't find this interesting. I like Jeff Bridges, and you know I do. I know you don't, but that's fine. But I just thought he was kind of dull. Over to you, Doug.
This was a trip for me. It came out in 84, so I was 6 years old when it came out. Didn't see it in the theater, but my family rented it at a video store. And I fell in love with this movie.
Oh.
The line, red light, stop, green light. Like, go very fast. That stuck with me from 6 years old to 40, whatever I am now. So it had been a long time since I saw it, so rewatching it, I could see what fascinated me about this film when I was 6 years old. I had never seen an adult in a film act the way Jeff Bridges did. His interpretation of an alien learning human language and eccentricities and movement, that fascinated me when I was 6 years old. As an adult now, the movie was a little slower than I remember. It wasn't as funny as I remembered. I remember thinking everything Jeff Bridges did was hysterical when I was little. So it didn't have that impact on me now, but I still enjoyed myself. It still was a nostalgia punch for me for back when I was way younger than I am now.
Well, I'm glad I could give you a warm feeling in your tummy, Doug.
Thank you.
Here's that. The nice cars, too, like the Mustang and, what was that, a hot rod that the guy escaped
yes,
with?
I love that Mustang.
Yeah.
So, before we go, we got a couple things left. Did anybody buy anything?
Not this time.
Wow, Doug. Yeah. Doug didn't hit the buy button.
No Criterion sales?
Not yet.
Next no. This month.
July, they do their 50% off sale, so.
Nice.
Oh, I might have to PayPal Doug money because I need one movie.
Which one?
In the Mood for Love, One Car Why.
Okay.
That's the only one. I'll send you the money, no problem. I tried to order Last Criterion sale and I missed it. By the time I got home, I forgot. It was like $7. I'm like, fine. Perfect. Daniel, I think you might have bought something. A truckload.
Yeah, I bought like everything on Kijiji. I got like Born Legacy, Die Hard on Blu-ray, like the Die Hard collection, a bunch of stuff, a bunch of DC movies, Suicide Squad, Batman vs. Superman, Man of Steel, but these all came in a lot, so I don't know if I'm going to, I might rewatch them and then just sell them, I don't know.
Don't forget, you got Ernest.
Got a bunch. Sorry?
You got Ernest Halloween or something.
Yeah, Ernest Scared Stupid.
There you go. Okay, before we go, are we playing trivia tonight?
Hold on. Oh. I bought... someone's gave me the codes for Destroyer and Molly's Game, and I bought for $5 each the following movies, Jerry Maguire, The Close Encounters, 20th Anniversary, or whatever it was, 25th, with all the different versions of the film on it. So I also bought Thoroughbreds, which I need to watch, because I hear that's very good.
I loved it.
Yeah. Anna Taylor-Joy. I bought Aquaman for $10 because I didn't have it on iTunes. And for $5, I also got a film that I don't know why I like, but I like The Black Dahlia.
Oh, you love that film. I know you do.
Yeah, I don't know why I do, but...
It's De Palma, that's why.
Probably, yeah.
It's got nice characterization.
I've seen that movie. The novel's one of my favorite novels.
Mm-hmm.
I've been afraid to go to the movie and see what they did to the novel.
Stay where
they
are.
Massacre it.
They killed it.
And it's fascinating to me because I find the whole Black Dahlia murder fascinating, but this takes it into fantasy realm. So.
Okay, playing the three trivia because we're running out of time. You ready to go? Name the actor who appeared in all the following films. Go, Jerry Maguire, and Pay It Forward.
Yeah, Jay Moore, but we did.
Correct. We did this one? Okay, skip that card. Name the actress who appeared in all the following films. Jack Frost, Jerry Maguire, and Holy Man. Did we do this one?
Kelly Preston, and we did this one.
We did do this one?
If it's Kelly Preston, yeah.
That's fine. I'm getting new cards. Screw you guys. I have to get a new game. Okay. What movie involved the poacher, Australia, and Sue Carlton?
What was the question, sorry?
What movie involves a poacher, Australia, and Sue Charlton?
Australia.
Doug should know this. It was a huge film. Correct.
Wow. Oh, which one? What was it?
Crocodile Dundee. Okay, one tagline for the film says, somewhere under the sea and beyond imagination is an adventure in fantasy.
Little Mermaid.
Correct. Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey were in what two movies together?
Dirty Dancing and...
Good luck on the second one. I had no idea.
Havana Nights. I know it's wrong.
I've never seen that, actually.
I've never seen either.
It is the Dawn Patrol or Red Dawn? Red Dawn.
Red Dawn.
Okay, that's it. We're done. If they make it,
I win.
You make us watch it.
Fair enough. Goodbye, guys.